The topic assigned is the introduction to Exodus, designed, I'm sure, to get us started off into the book with other lessons looking at specific parts of the book of Exodus. This will be somewhat an overview and has to be selective because there is so much that could be delved into with regard to an introduction to any of the books of the Bible, and certainly the book of Exodus and the books of the Pentateuch are deeply involved in studies that relate to the field of introduction. The book is called Exodus. This name comes from the Greek. Ek is one Greek word, hodos another. Ek means out of, hodos means a way or a road or a route, and so the way out. And of course I see we have exit over several of the doors here, which of course comes also from the word Exodus and means the way out. So the book of Exodus then was given this title because it is describing the way out of Egypt for the children of Israel to move into the fulfillment of God's plan for them as a nation. The Hebrew name for the book is Ha'eli Hashem, which is translated, these are the names. The ancient Near East literature followed the pattern of giving a name to a document according to the first phrase in that document. And you have Genesis, which begins in the beginning, Bereshit bara. The name then is Bereshit for Genesis. The book of Exodus begins, these are the names, and then proceeds to give the names of the patriarchs, and then goes on to give the full account of how they had become slaves and of Moses and all of the other things that are related to it. So the book then pertains to the Exodus from Egypt and the children of Israel, the descendants of the 12 patriarchs. The book of Exodus is a part in biblical study of the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, all of which, of course, are believed by those who believe the Bible to have been written by Moses. And so they are grouped together, and the five books together tell us or give us the account of the children of Israel from Abraham, beginning in the 11th chapter of Genesis, down through Isaac and Jacob, and then Joseph, and bondage and Moses, and then all the rest. Genesis covers that of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Joseph. Exodus is about Moses and the beginning of the Exodus and the moving into the wilderness journey. Genesis, on the one hand, covers a period of time in excess of 2,500 years, and then the book of Exodus covers a period of time, however, of only about 80 years, beginning from Moses' birth until he leads the people out of the land. But most of those 80 years are in the first three chapters, and the rest of the book of Exodus is devoted to a period of time not much over 4 months, as it tells about the plagues and the leading of the people out of the land. The book of Numbers, the book of Leviticus, which is next, gives a number of laws pertaining to the priest and the ceremonies and other matters that were beginning to be instituted in the tabernacle. And it covers a very short period of time. And then the book of Numbers tells about the wandering of the children of Israel for a period of about 38 years, so that the events through Exodus in the wilderness cover less than 2 years, and then the wanderings in the wilderness in Numbers covers about 38 years. Then the book of Deuteronomy is a repeating of the law, the second giving of the law, and Moses rehearses many things that he had said to the fathers of this generation now left who are going into the land. The book of Exodus then picks up where Genesis leaves off and gives the narrative of the bondage of the children of Israel and then of the raising up of Moses and the deliverance from that bondage by the plagues and then the institution of the Passover as they are delivered by the death of the firstborn one in the land, and then proceeds to describe the wanderings from Egypt to Sinai, and then in chapter 19, having come to Sinai, they are settled here for a period of time as they receive the law and other events take place, and Moses also receives the instruction for building the tabernacle. And this is finally completed and erected in the 40th chapter of Exodus. Concerning criticism of the Pentateuch and of Exodus, we would not have time to go into all of the details with regard to that. So we'll just make a passing glance at the very, very technical feel of criticisms of the Pentateuch. The book of Exodus and all of the Pentateuch was accepted by Jews from ancient times to modern, and by Christians from the beginning of Christianity unto modern times as being written by Moses. And that was true pretty well universally until about 1750, when a man by the name of Ostruck began a theory that eventually came to be known as the documentary hypothesis, after it had been worked and reworked and reworked by others, until Wellhausen put some of the finishing touches on the documentary hypothesis. This was the theory that no one person wrote the book, but that the book was a compilation of several documents that had been written at various periods in the ancient world. And these were given names or abbreviations by letters according to the theory. The theory was that one document was written by a Jehovistic writer who used the name Jehovah or Yahweh for God, and that another document was written by the Elohistic author who used the word Elohim for God, and then that these two works were worked together by some redactor, and then later a priestly P portion was worked in, And then finally, the Deuteronomist, or the writer of Deuteronomy, wove his work into all of this. Well, suffice it to say, there is not one whit of evidence for all of these theories and documents. It is true, of course, that the name Jehovah is used, the name Elohim is used for God, and they are used interchangeably in the Pentateuch and throughout the Old Testament, for that matter. But there is no evidence of any documents, separate documents. No one has ever found in archaeology or ever found any other literary allusion to any of these so-called documents of J.E.D.P. and of the redactors who may have woven them together. You see, if such a case as this were called into court, and you were to then be called to call a witness for J, for the J document, who would they call? They don't know a single name of anybody who ever saw or touched or smelled or read a J document. They could not call a single solitary personal witness nor historical witness to such a document, and the same would be true with all the rest of them. And any decent judge today would throw such a case out of court because there would be no foundation for it. And yet in the so-called scholarly world, many people have swallowed this hook, line, and sinker simply because it is esoteric, I suppose, because it does not have any factual basis to it whatsoever. But since about 1750, these theories have been spun and respun and have become exceedingly complicated over the years. A.A. McRae, in his article in Zondervan Pictorial Bible Encyclopedia on Exodus, says, "From a very early time, Jewish tradition held that the entire book was written by Moses. Only within the last two centuries has any considerable number of writers questioned this origin, but lately it has frequently been denied as a result of the spread of the critical theories which, beginning with Genesis, were extended to the Pentateuch and today are widely taught." I guess I could go without saying this, but you see, our world today thinks of the people at Harvard and Yale and places like that as great scholars. Brother Jack Lewis says of those, at least those in the religious fields up there, that they have all the right facts and all the wrong conclusions. Now, tell me, how can a person be a scholar who has all the right facts but all the wrong conclusions? A good scholar gets all the right facts and then comes to the right conclusions. And it is indeed tragic that so much wasted brain power exists in the world today. Concerning the Mosaic authorship of the book, which is indeed that which has all the evidence and all the factual information to support it and has been held through all of these centuries until the last few critical centuries, indeed the Bible affirms strongly, and early Jewish and Christian literature affirms strongly, the Mosaic authorship of the Pentateuch. In Exodus chapter 17 and verse 14, God told Moses to write the account of the victory of the Israelites over Amalek in a book for memorial and to rehearse it in the ears of Joshua. In Exodus chapter 34 and verses 27 and 28, God was with Moses for 40 days and nights in the mountain, and he told him to write the words that God had given to him, and Moses wrote these upon the tables the words of the covenant and the Ten Commandments. In Exodus chapter 24 and verse 4, Moses wrote all the words of Jehovah and rose up early in the morning and built an altar. The Mosaic authorship of the law and the Pentateuch is affirmed over and over again throughout the Old Testament. Of course, they are given the title of the Book of Moses, the Book of the Law of Moses, the Law of Moses. And these phrases occur many, many times in the Old Testament in allusion back to the Pentateuch and to specific quotations and specific incidences that are recorded in the Pentateuch. In the intertestamental period, in what is called the Apocrypha and Pseudepigrapha, there are many, many allusions to Moses as the author of the law or the Pentateuch. In the works of Philo, who wrote about 10 volumes in the Greek edition of his work, his entire work is basically built around Moses and the things Moses wrote in the law. And his work was written, he lived about B.C. 20 to about A.D. 40. And so his life is parallel to that of our Lord almost. Then Josephus in the first century, writing around A.D. 80 or 90, writes repeatedly about Moses and the Pentateuch. Then, of course, in the New Testament, Moses is recognized as the author of the Pentateuch and thus of Exodus. Jesus himself said in John 5, 46 and 47, "If you believe Moses, you would believe me, for he wrote of me. But if you believe not his writings, how shall you believe my words?" In Mark 7 and verse 10, Jesus quotes the fifth commandment from Exodus chapter 20 and verse 12 and attributes it to Moses. While not specifying Exodus as a part of the Pentateuch, many passages throughout the Old and New refer to content in the Pentateuch as being written by Moses. As we have already said, the critics have no evidence. They have no documents to produce. They have no witnesses to produce. They have nothing but theory that they claim to back up by style and by some few words and phrases and things like that that they cite. But they have no evidence at all for the critical theories. The major thing about the book of Exodus is, of course, its content. And when one considers the content of the book of Exodus and weighs it in terms of history, one would have to conclude, I believe, that the book of Exodus is of divine origin because of the overwhelming power and influence of the things that are in it. The book of Exodus contains many, many formative events that formed the Hebrew people, formed the nation of Israel, and then laid the foundation to form Christianity, and that have been so powerful and so influential in all the world. These events include, of course, the bondage and the slavery, the plagues and the deliverance, the establishment of the Passover, and the Exodus experience, the giving of the Ten Commandments and of the Old Covenant. and many other details relating to all of these things. All of these events work together to form the nation of Israel and to bring about all the subsequent history concerning the Jews and the Near East. Because of these events, many wars have been fought and still being fought in the Middle East. Many lives have been lost, and many problems have arisen as nations have fallen and as others have risen. On the other hand, these tremendous formative events have helped to shape the morals and ethics of more than 2 billion people in our world today. The standard of living and of civilized society have been lifted greatly because of these formative events. All of these significant events were a part of the eternal plan of God in order to bring His Son in the world to save mankind. Let's look first at the bondage or the slavery of the children of Israel in Egypt. In Genesis chapter 15, God made a covenant with Abraham and said to him in verses 13 through 16, "Know of a surety that your seed shall be sojourners in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterward shall they come out with great substance. But you shall go to your fathers in peace. You shall be buried in a good old age. And in the fourth generation they shall come hither, for the iniquity of the Amorite is not yet full." God's plan is, and His life, His timeline, is not the same as man's. Man would think in terms of, if God made a promise to Abraham, He would fulfill it to him during Abraham's lifetime. But indeed, it was more than 400 years before He began to fulfill it. And then, of course, many, many more centuries were involved in carrying out many other of the details of God's promises to Abraham. Book of Exodus tells of, or Book of Genesis tells of the rise of Joseph to power, and then of Exodus, of a new king arising who knew not Joseph. And Abraham's descendants had come down into the land under Joseph, but when Joseph died, they were made slaves and were subject to bondage. The slavery was not without purpose in God's plan. As a matter of fact, it was with very great purpose. In Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 20, Moses said, "But Jehovah hath taken you and brought you forth out of the iron furnace, out of Egypt, to be to him a people, an inheritance as at this day." Now, an iron furnace is used, of course, to heat iron and to mold it. And God used the iron furnace of Egypt to mold the children of Israel into a people of the likes of which there have never has never been in all the history of the world. There is not another people in all the history of the world who have maintained a cohesiveness as the Hebrew people have since the experience in Egypt and those associated with the Exodus from Egypt. Consider in the United States, when our forefathers came to this country, there were more than 200 tribes of Indians. And over the years, genocide has been committed against nearly all of these tribes of Indians. And there are only a few over a handful of tribes of Indians that are represented today. If you think back to your history of Europe and to the Germanic tribes and the tribes of Scotland and Ireland and England, nearly all of these or traces of these have disappeared. And then particularly consider that Israel continues, but what about Esau? The Bible itself prophesied that Israel would continue, but Esau would disappear. And since AD 70 and the destruction of Jerusalem, no one has known anything of any descendants of Esau or the Edomites. But the descendants of Israel continue to thrive in the world, despite many, many pogroms that have been worked against them. God indeed welded them into a nation that has been a nation of survivors, and who have survived, not, of course, strictly by their own power, because God's providence and God's work has been involved in this through all the years. But nevertheless, God did form them by this bondage experience into one nation and the other experiences that we'll be looking at shortly. No people have survived nearly four millennia with one consistent and impelling history. Their roots are deep in the faith of Abraham, the purity and loyalty of Joseph, the memories of the bondage and slavery, the joy and happiness of the Passover and deliverance, the victorious triumph of the Exodus, and the wonders of the very personal covenant with God. The Hebrew people, though having many internal problems, have nevertheless maintained an essential oneness described in Exodus. Through thick and thin, they have remained united in their identity with Abraham, Moses, the Passover, the Exodus, the covenant, and all of these experiences that are described in the book of Exodus. Christians also accept these events as a foundational part of our religious heritage, and we then have, as the Jews, oftentimes suffered and died for belief in these. Then move next to the Exodus experience. The Exodus experience was equally formative in welding this nation together. To see the power of the Exodus experience, one might simply read through the book of Psalms and note the many, many, many references in Psalms back to the Exodus experience. But for our time period, we'll look just at Psalm 114. But it is so typical of many, many others in the book. When Israel went forth out of Egypt, the house of Jacob from a people of strange language, Judah became his sanctuary, Israel his dominion. The sea saw it and fled, the Red Sea, as they crossed it. The Jordan was driven back, and again later at the end of the journey. The mountains skipped like rams, the little hills like lambs. What aileth thee, O thou sea, that you flee? Thou Jordan, that you turn back? Ye mountains, that ye skip like rams, ye little hills like lambs. Tremble, thou earth, at the presence of the Lord, at the presence of the God of Jacob, who turned the rock into a pool of water, and flint into a fountain of waters. Indeed, you have the role of several of the experiences in the wilderness that are brought out and emphasized with the conclusion, tremble thou earth at the presence of the Lord. The Exodus experiences and their continuation now for more than 3.5 millennia prove that God is God. God has shown himself to be God by establishing these formative developments and memorials and other things, and of course continues to emphasize it. The Jews and the Exodus and all of these things constitute great evidential material. Frederick the Great once asked his minister Alcuin, what was the greatest evidence of the inspiration of the Bible and of Christianity? And Alcuin responded, the Jews. And the fact that the Jews have been welded together, been maintained, and these institutions have continued through the years emphasizes God's work in history. And when you can find these things in no other people in history, then truly you have evidence that God was at work. The Passover was established as a memorial and has continued for these 3.5 millennia. There have been many difficulties and hardships upon the Jews through these years, and yet they have continued to find a way to observe the Passover every year. When you read the stories of Anne Frank's and of many of other of the Jews during the Holocaust, you find that these people found some way, even in the concentration camps and wherever they might have been, to observe and to celebrate the Passover. The Feast of Pentecost and Tabernacles, Leviticus chapter 23 sets forth the solemn occasions in the annual year of the Jews, but these have likewise continued and do so to today in the observance of the Jews and in parallel observance that Christians have. The Sabbath was established in conjunction with these experiences, and of course was given as the fourth commandment in Exodus chapter 20. And the Sabbath has continued through all of these millennia as well. And the fact that it has spread over all of the earth as a testimony to God, to Moses, to the covenant, likewise shows God's work in the history of man. In Galatians 4 and verse 4, we read that in the fullness of time, God sent forth his Son, born of a woman, born under the law. Christ then came to fulfill all of these things that God had put in motion at various times and places. The synagogues were built as the Jews were dispersed over the empire. And here the stories of the bondage, the Exodus, the Passover, Pentecost, and all of these others was told over and over again and illustrated and demonstrated by the observance of them each year. Another great aspect in the book of Exodus is the covenant and the Ten Commandments. The covenant was given on Mount Sinai. God began by thundering with his own mighty and powerful voice from the top of Mount Sinai and gave the Ten Commandments. The people were so fearful, they requested that God not speak further directly to them, but speak through Moses. God then gave the covenant to Moses, and in chapter 24 of Exodus, Moses, having written this covenant, dedicated it with blood. And of course, then Jeremiah 31 prophesied of the new covenant, and Hebrews chapter 8 clearly tells us of the coming and the fulfillment of this new covenant in the covenant under Christ. We would have to conclude, after studying all of these things, that the message of the Old Testament and of Exodus particularly, is that we must obey God's covenant and he will bless us. But if we disobey it, he will curse us. The typology would be an extensive study. We won't have time to go into all of the aspects of the typology. But we have, of course, from Hebrews developed that Christ is a type of Moses, that the tabernacle is a type of the church, the holy place a type of the church, of course, the tabernacle in a bigger sense, the type of the whole thing, and then the most holy place a type of heaven, the high priest a type of Christ, the bondage a type of sin, passing through and being baptized under the cloud and in the sea, a type of baptism, the laver in the court, a type of baptism, the showbread, a type of the Lord's Supper, the candlestick, a type of Christ as our light, or the light that Christ brings to us. These and many other details that are foreshadowed in the book of Exodus for the new covenant. It is impossible to plumb the depths of the riches of the book of Exodus during this entire lectureship, and certainly to give an introduction in one lesson. But if one will read and study the book of Exodus, especially in conjunction with the book of Hebrews and other related material, one's life will be greatly enriched and blessed, and I think one's faith will be greatly increased to see that how God acted 3,500 years ago in delivering the children of Israel from Egypt, in providing them exodus from that bondage and slavery, and in instituting a number of formative events and of the covenant and of memorials, and that these have continued all these many, many centuries, all are evidence of God's operation in the history of the world. Thank you very much.